The Ensemble podcast is intended for professional financial advisors. This content is created in partnership with our sponsor,
NMMT Limited, ABN 42058 835573, AFSL 23465,
and is limited to publicly available information. Before acting on any general advice, you should consider whether appropriate and obtain financial advice from a qualified financial advisor. Ensemble does not hold an AFS license and does not provide any financial advice or services or endorse any general advice. If a PDS or IM exists, you should obtain a copy and review it thoroughly before making a decision.
Hi, I'm Amy Baker from Recov Advice, and I'm here to help navigate the investment landscape to get you the best results for your clients. Let's jump in.
North is one of Australia's leading wrap platforms for super and pension, recently ranked number one for advisor proposition and retirement in the latest NMG Advisor Wealth Survey. North is purpose-built to help advisors confidently prepare clients for and guide them through retirement. With market-leading retirement solutions, flexible managed portfolios, and integrated digital technology, North supports clearer conversations, scalable advice, and better retirement outcomes. Backed by disciplined governance and continual innovation, North partners with advisors who are serious about growing their practices and their clients' wealth.
Well, today we're tackling one of the biggest challenges in advice right now, and that's how we structure retirement in a way that actually holds up when clients are living longer, drawing down for decades, and expecting certainty, a pretty hard task to master. And if we're honest, the traditional strategies of relying on markets to do the heavy lifting doesn't always translate into confidence and good client behavior. So today's really about how we evolve that. I'm joined by Ben Hillier from AMP North, who brings a technical lens around retirement income structures and how strategies like IRIS are designed to work, and Liz Hale from Hale Financial, who's implementing these strategies with clients. So we'll get a real world view on what actually looks like in practice, which is really cool. I'm looking forward to this session. So first of all, I would like to hand over and introduce you guys, and just if you don't mind just saying a little bit about who you are and your experience on this particular topic, and we can get right into it.
Go, Liz. Ladies first.
My name's Liz. I'm a financial advisor on the Gold Coast, and mainly do retirement advice these days, and I've been using the North Lifetime Income, what do they call them, retirement income streams now for going on 2 years.
Excellent.
Thanks, Liz. Ben Hillier from AMP North. AMP has been a pioneer in the IRIS strategies. We were the first to market and especially advisor-focused solutions. And for me, we often call these longevity solutions, and that's something I'm sure we'll talk about. But there's a theme I really want to concentrate on as well. The reason we developed these is actually not about solving longevity. It's solving adequacy, making sure people can spend as much as possible confidently. And that's been a real driving passion of mine since probably 15 years ago. I was working at several different super funds and analyzed just how much people left unspent when they passed away inadvertently. Clearly, the research that we did showed that people intended to spend their superannuation during their lifetime to fund retirement, but they were just leaving 90% on average unspent. And so I thought, look, there's got to be a better way. There's got to be a more efficient way to convert that capital that they've saved up so hard over their working life into retirement income. So really excited to talk about it and talk about our journey about how we've got here.
Fantastic. Yeah, there's so much to these products. Can we just, before I go deep diving, get some experience from Liz, just to understand, for those who don't know what IRIS is or what this product is, do you mind, Ben, just giving us a bit of a rundown on what this is all about, just how it works away from just a basic account-based pension?
Sure. So IRIS, Innovative Retirement Income Stream. I think the wonks at Treasury didn't realise we already had another IRIS in the industry. So the legislation was passed in 2017, and then the Centrelink legislation came in 2019. And so basically from 2019, we've had this new category of pensions. So it sits alongside the existing account-based pension regulations in the SIS Act, and then the annuity regulations in the SIS Act. This is another one. And so everything we know about annuities, or everything we know about account-based pensions, we've got to unlearn, because this is a completely new set. So things like, there's no minimum drawdown. things like you can have a tax-free pension that it actually does it, that's deferred. So it's actually not paying income, and you can still make contributions into it. And you can be taking lump sums. There's sort of all sorts of new tips, tricks, crossover points, strategies that enables basically just additional flexibility, additional arrows in the quiver that advisors can use to maximize their client outcomes, whether that be to overcome longevity risk, as we talked about, to be able to provide income for a spouse no matter how long the spouse lives. But it certainly improves Centrelink testing for age pension, for age care, just maximizing income, all sorts of different strategies that this category enables. Effectively, the unifying features of an IRIS is it can be deferred. It can be deferred either during the accumulation phase and the retirement phase, and then it starts to pay income. And once the income starts, it will be pay income for life. That's a requirement. However, unlike traditional annuities, the income can vary based on, for example, investment performance. And so, that's we all know and understand the benefit of staying invested in the market. We do it every day with accumulation and pension, account-based pensions. We all accept that investment risk means you do have some bad days and years, but on average, you actually do very, very well. And it's far better than staying invested in cash over a long period of time, of course. So these IRIS solutions allow you to take that into an annuity construct, sort of explode it and say, no, we can have income for life, but we can stay invested in the market all the way through retirement, and we can get all the upside benefits. But we accept there's going to be some variability to the income. Think of it a bit like a fixed home loan versus a variable home loan. We all know, I think, or I understand that a variable home loan is better value. To get a fixed loan, you're actually betting against the bank that you know better than the bank. Sometimes that's important for peace of mind or just to lock in some certainty. But generally, Australians are generally comfortable that most of the time we actually do use variable home loans, but fixed loans have their place too. And similarly, IRIS is like a variable income for life. It sits alongside a fixed income for life, which is a traditional annuity, but they both have their place.
Excellent. And so I guess that really is a nice segue into getting Liz to just share some of her, I guess, start with how, since introducing these strategies into your business, how this has changed with your clients. So the conversations you're having with clients right now regarding their retirement planning. So how's that looking for you in the business? And you mentioned offline the other day that you also are introducing this in the accumulation phase too.
Yes, absolutely. It's really allowed me to bring forward a lot of the retirement conversations to a much younger age group than I might have previously. So the benefit of the IRIS in accumulation is that you can start the process of quarantining investment growth from future Centrelink assessment from as early as whenever somebody opens an account. So I'm starting to have conversations more with clients in their 40s even about starting one of these to give them the options on steroids, I guess, when they get to retirement age.
That's unbelievable. And that's actually what really piqued my interest a bit. We often are in advice as a practice, in our practice, and I know you're the same, and I think any advisor listening would agree to this, as where our value lies in terms of someone could do it yourself, they go to an industry fund, they could actually set themselves up with super fund and then go into account-based pension at the time of retirement without needing advisors. But with something like this, it adds another layer of complexity, but also value to what we do in terms of the technical side. And I love the idea that you could actually quarantine that amount to ensure that in the future they will be able to access some Centrelink benefit, depending, of course, their other tests and whatnot. But that's a fantastic feature in regards to what this can do. And it does layer in the value of what we do, and also then kind of trumps the, compare the pair of an industry fund in terms of being able to actually take that client on a better journey.
It's a really good thing at review time as well to be able to present to a client sort of the benefit that you've been able to achieve over that year over and above any kind of investment returns. And we all know how much control we really have over investment returns, right? But this is something where we are actually demonstrating really good value, and it it really does bring forward for clients that those conversations around, you know, what's this going to look like? Are we on track? And demonstrating real tangible value on the way through in those earlier years in a way I probably couldn't before or didn't feel I could as much before.
Yeah, I think that that year-by-year review, that, that incremental benefit you're getting with these RS strategies is really, really powerful for advisors. I've heard from a number of advisors that that alone, because the clients can actually see how they can see, hey, look, I've got a balance of $1 million and I've got an asset test of $500,000 already. So effectively, immediately you put some money into an IRS, it gets a 40% discount. But then over time, as we've been talking, if you're in that accumulation phase, there's no cost to that. There's no restrictions. There's no lack of investment choice, but that benefit grows. And so we've recently just analyzed the first crop of clients we had in what we call lifetime super. This is the IRS in accumulation phase. And they're all sitting on, even though markets have fallen, so they've lost some of their investment growth, but they're all sitting on about a 50% discount. So they started with a 40% discount a couple of years ago. Now they're on a 50% discount. And they can see that. That's visible to them. It's tangible. That'll just keep on growing. The longer you're in it, generally, the better it gets. Effectively, you know, for those who haven't seen these before, whenever basically the purchase amount that Centrelink sees as a deemed value, they use the deeming rate. So whatever you put in, grossed up by the deeming rate, that's what Centrelink sees. And so they're ignoring the actual investment earnings. So over time, as long as you can beat the deeming rate, and let's all hang up our boots if we can't, then you're increasing the value of these IRA strategies. But the benefit is you're not even locked in to a lifetime income stream until you actually retire. So it's a free option. Why wouldn't you take it?
Well, that's compelling. Actually, question I was going to ask Liz is, how do you explain this to clients without feeling too complex? So, because there, I've already had a few hours at this, just researching and learning and trying to get my head around it and how I could implement it. But, you know, us advisors we go into strategy mode and clients are just trying to keep it simple and understand. And that's a big part of our job is relaying that back to them in a simplistic way. How do you find you do that in a day-to-day sort of scenario, Liz?
Yeah, no, it is relatively complex as a strategy, but more so in the retirement phase, I think, than in the accumulation phase. So for breaking that down in the accumulation phase is relatively simple. I just explain to clients, I call it the Centrelink-friendly super, and everybody wants something Centrelink-friendly if they can. I do it visually and drawing out a little chart for clients that demonstrates the difference between their balance over a long period of time and the trajectory we might expect on that and the upper deeming rate and what that will look like. It's a really simple three-line chart and just explaining that they will have that benefit when they get to retirement, explaining that they get the option to use this but not the obligation. So, as Ben rightly said, there's no cost for it. There's no investment penalty. It operates exactly the same as any other super fund. You can continue to fund your insurance from it. You can pay your advice fees from it. You know, do all your salary sacrifices, all those sorts of things. It operates exactly like any other super fund. And then at retirement, you get the option to use this retirement income stream if it's deemed appropriate for you at that point. So I'm using it for people to either increase Centrelink entitlements or potentially bring them forward. But I'm also using it for people where the trajectory is not to be eligible for Centrelink at all. But this is kind of like a plan B insurance policy sitting in their super fund, where if things don't go to plan and they don't achieve those objectives, whether it's because of ill health or job loss or anything else, they've got this that they can then turn on if they need it. And if they don't need it, it didn't cost them anything.
Which is brilliant. I love that. It's an insurance policy. It's a safety net that they can rely on. And I think that really comes down to the challenges we're facing in terms of the longevity risk of a generation that is going to, you know, live longer and potentially run out of money, different to what Ben was saying earlier, where, you know, there's been a problem of people not spending enough over time. We're starting to see a shift in the sand where we're doing forecasts and they are going to outlive potentially. So it can be a fantastic sort of method to ensure that there's going to be cash flow for these people and they will be able to access potentially more Centrelink than initially.
Absolutely.
Now, do you mind giving us an example of how this works and a strategy, a real case, you know, obviously not including their names, but just an example of how you've actually structured this in practice?
Yeah, okay. So I've got lots and lots of clients sitting in accumulation phase in this at the moment, all happily squirreling away their future Centrelink benefits. I've got one lady in particular going through the deferred annuity at the moment. So when you get to retirement, that's when sort of the rubber hits the road on these things. So we did a split when she turned age 65 and commenced a deferred lifetime annuity with 40% of her super balance at the time. She is still working. So she's still contributing into the other super fund. But what happened at that point is we essentially make a withdrawal from her retirement income stream and recreate another super account and leave the remainder in the deferred portion. That portion then becomes the tax-free environment and she can make, she defers income payments but is still taking income from it in the form of lump sums. So it's lump sum commutations. Every time you do that, it further reduces the purchase price, which is the bit that Centrelink assesses for age pension assets test. And we, most people are assets tested rather than income tested, vast majority in my experience. So what's happening at the moment is her initial purchase price was already discounted with probably only a small amount due to income growth because she had only been in it for a short period of time. She'd had a small discount from quarantining investment growth, but now every year we're taking a lump sum out. We're on trajectory for her to have in about 7 years, she will have a lifetime income stream with a zero Centrelink assessment value and then her standard super balance at the time, which she can then commence to a standard account-based pension. So we're hoping to get her overall, her situation, we should be able to get her about 30 to 40% of her assets completely quarantined from Centrelink assessment. You can do more than that. We didn't need to for her, but you can do more if you need to.
And that's where the value lies in this. I found that brilliant where you can do that commutation and reduce that value and have that funded that's quarantined, but you still got accumulation. You still have an account-based pension as well working with it.
She'll have the retirement income stream, which will give her that guaranteed income for life, invested according to her risk profile, which should do better for her over the longer term than cash investments, as Ben was saying before. But she'll retain full access to the capital that's in her account-based pension the same way she would before. She's a single lady, so the assets test for her is significantly lower than it is for a couple, which is often the problem singles have. So hiding that money means that she's at, hiding it, I shouldn't say hiding it, but hiding it means that she is going to be eligible for Centrelink straight away at age 67 with all the benefits that that's going to give her. So the pension card and all that stuff that she needs. And obviously if she's spending some Centrelink age pension, she doesn't need to spend quite as much from her account post pension over time, which means it will last longer.
Mm. Hiding might be a tricky word, maybe quarantine. I like the quarantine.
quarantine. I usually say quarantine, that slipped.
And this is the thing, that I've got a client that, you know, they're on that edge. They're teetering between, like, they'll be able to get the low income card from Centrelink, but they wouldn't be able to get any payment. But when you've got a strategy like this, you'll be able to enable them to get a little bit with, if you're going to be dealing with Centrelink and you spend a whole day filling out one of those forms just to get that low income healthcare card or whatever it's called. Sorry, I've forgotten the full name. Anyway, you know where I'm going with this. You spend that time, you may as well, you want to be able to go, right, well, I'm spending all this time with giving every piece of my information to Centrelink. Would it be nice to be able to just get a little bit of pocket money along the way as well? And this is actually what this product can do. But it doesn't dismiss the entire strategy of an account-based pension. What I saw the other day is it can really work hand in hand. Ben, do you want to just give us some insight on how that can actually work in a structure sort of point of view?
Sure. As I said, we've pioneered these strategies, basically invented these types of accounts. And so we've got some good experience now after a number of years. On average, I mean, Liz's client with this particular one is pretty close to average. On average, it's actually 50-50. We see in a retirement phase in an IRIS, 50% an account-based pension. Now, look, that's in some ways a misleading average. You've actually got quite a bunch. It's 15% who put all that one client's balance into the IRIS, but that just simply means they've got another, a spouse with some money outside of super, or they've got other property, investment properties, or other assets. So obviously every client is different, but you have a really broad dispersion. But certainly people doing things that they traditionally wouldn't have done with an annuity. I can't imagine that people would have put their whole super in, but that's just because it's so flexible. You can have very high rates of income, a lot of flexibility, and we talked about the complexity. I prefer the term sophistication. These are innovative, sophisticated new strategies. You didn't mention, Liz, but during the time that client's got that deferred lifetime income account, yes, you were reducing the asset test every time they take out a lump sum, plus there's zero income test for that whole period during the deferral. And that can last for some time. You could have $1 million. Let's just use a simple example, just to make the numbers easy to understand for the listeners, right? So you'd have $1 million in a deferred lifetime income account. It would have a zero income test as long as it's in that phase. Every year, to say they're about 70 years old, every year you might be taking about $80,000 out over, let's call it 5 years. That's $400,000 we've taken out as lump sums. So the purchase amount went from $1 million down to $600,000, and then the asset test is 60% of that. So the asset test of $1 million balance, just say you were taking out 8% and earning 8%, still got $1 million in there, but the asset test to be down to 360 or something, and the income test is zero. So very, very powerful. And having a solution where it sits alongside an account-based pension just introduces new optionality. An account-based pension's got a minimum but no maximum. Though these IRISs typically will have a maximum but no minimum. And so, good investment returns, you can be taking more out of one than the other. You can really balance. You can also, we start to see advisors have a really interesting take on how they allocate the risk assets across the whole portfolio. Typically when we're all sitting on a one-legged stool, an account-based pension, you're trying to achieve everything with just one investment strategy, right? You're trying to solve longevity risk and inflation and sequencing and everything with just investment strategy in one vehicle. Now you've got a two-legged stool and hopefully the age pension, which gives you three legs, and you can take a more balanced view. We're actually starting to see, for example, advisors take more risk in the IRIS and less risk in the account-based pension, which is a really, really interesting strategy. But it makes sense because the account-based pension is capital that you care about. It's capital that you care about. It's capital value because you might want to take it out as big lump sums. Maybe it goes to the kids when the client passes away. Whereas the IRIS, it does have a money back death and exit benefit, so people can feel comfortable they're going to get good value. But over time, its value is not its capital value. Its value is just as an engine to provide lifetime income. And so it actually makes sense to just dial up the risk on that, maximize the income, and then you can be a little bit more conservative about the capital that you really want to preserve for, specifically for its own value. So really interesting new strategies and approaches.
You've touched so many things there. I should have had a notepad because I was like, okay, we could branch off into various conversations based on a lot that you just said then, one of which is not dismissing the use of account-based pension. Adding the value of what an advisor will always naturally give is this selection of investment and the investment approach, which is, I feel, another layer that we can give that, just an industry fund can't. We have full transparency. You've got with North, for example, your APL is pretty broad, but you've got managed accounts or you've got direct funds. So the advisor still got the hands-on approach to add that their specialty in respect to how the portfolio is managed. But one thing that really stood out with what you just said then, Ben, and I think Liz and I could probably go into a rabbit hole of this conversation, is really the meaningful conversations around how you structure such a retirement plan for what is important to that client. So the estate planning conversations, you know, the legacy that you're creating, so with utilizing some of their account-based pension, the income, what and what's the end game for them? And I guess that's something where I feel is really important to what we do in advice, is bringing it back to the needs of the client and some of those very important and special, meaningful conversations we have to understand how they actually want their retirement spending or funding to be spent and where it's going to go once they're no longer here as well. Liz, are you finding that when you're doing these, you know, you're working through these strategies and having these conversations, that this has actually opened up better conversations with the clients to actually further understand what's important, given that we've got money going to be funneled in different avenues, especially from an estate planning consideration?
Yes, absolutely. I have clients who, as I'm sure everybody does, who say everything from, I'm going to spend everything, they'll be lucky to have the house, to it's really important to me to gift to my children and give them a head start. And then some people who don't have dependents, right? There's everything in the middle there. The interesting thing with the IRIS strategy from a death benefit perspective, I guess, is that whilst you are giving up access to capital and some death benefits in exchange for that, in the same way you do with annuities and some of those other things, the long-term trajectory of the death, the overall estate death value actually looks really good over the long term, because we're finding that the account-based pensions last longer. They've got more money in them. So there tends to be a bit of a trade-off in sort of the middle period of that retirement, but then it evens itself out again towards the end. Would you agree with that, Ben?
Yeah, 100%. So what we typically see, and our modeling tools make this a lot, you know, very, very easy, of course, to be able to see how much we get in income, how much Centrelink, how much capital access is available, and what's the death benefit at various ages. And you're exactly right. Most of the time we actually see, though the IRIS death benefit will decline to zero by life expectancy, that's a legislative requirement that applies to all lifetime income streams that get these Centrelink benefits. But the value of the whole portfolio can actually be extended for, you know, higher for longer, because the account-based pension lasts longer. Why? Because, hey, look, if you're spending an extra over a period of retirement, maybe $200,000 extra age pension that you wouldn't have otherwise got, that's 200 grand that hasn't been taken out of the account-based pension, plus compound earnings. And so if you have a look at people's likely life expectancy, especially when there's a couple, when, you know, we know that the probability, you know, that there's one in five of your clients will have one spouse alive at age 98. So you have to sort of be thinking longish time frames, especially when there's a couple, in all likelihood, you'll actually be enhancing the estate value over that period of time.
Yeah, which is something that clients, the vast majority of people prefer that outcome, even if the throwaway line is, I'm going to spend everything and they'll be lucky to have the house. They're not disappointed to hear that there'll be more value towards the end.
Oh, there's so much value in this. I mean, one thing that I love, because my favorite part of advice, besides the strategy, I do go into the strategy sort of space a lot, we all do, and I love complex advice, is the other side of this was the investment approach. So those who go, you know, the old school annuity, this isn't that. This is actually a very hybrid approach where we can add so many layers to it and add so much value that really creates something very bespoke to the client. And it really comes down to how we communicate that value across to them as well. So going back, there's something else that was mentioned earlier around cost. If we're thinking, you know, comparing, you know, compare the pair, and you might have a financial planning practice might be sort of leaning on the simple kind of advice of just using industry funds and whatnot. How do we actually have that conversation to get them to think differently, broadly, and go, right, best interest duties are being met because the client's going to be ending up with, say, X amount, and there are calculators, I might add, in North to help an advisor work out all of this for you. But just knowing that we do a forecast and we're like, oh, based on what I know, I don't think they're going to actually be eligible for Centrelink if we were just going to the traditional retirement plan of accumulation through to account-based pension. But how do we actually have those conversations and sort of shift that thinking to go, the cost of going onto a platform and doing it this way out benefits than the traditional sense of just going super and account-based pension.
Yeah. So the experience I've had with it is, so North has a fairly extensive investment menu, same as the other platforms that are available. It's relatively cost effective. So if you want to beat an industry fund on cost and still do an IRIS, you absolutely can using some of the index options that are available in there. There's only one or two industry funds that are a bit tricky to beat on price, and everybody probably knows who they are. But in terms of your best interest duty, price isn't the only thing that we can give advice based on.
Precisely.
You know, investment options, bucketing strategies when you're getting closer to retirement, as well as this retirement income stream product, you can demonstrate a best interest value. If we can, the tools will help you illustrate pension uplift. I just presented a statement of advice earlier this week to clients where they're both in their 50s, early 50s at the moment, and I'm moving them both from industry funds into IRIS. And the potential uplift for them at the moment, the calculator is showing $20,000 a year potentially in retirement for them both across the pair of them. Over the course of a 30-year retirement, that's far outweighs whether the overall cost is 0.38 or 0.39 for the product overall. And I'm quite comfortable that that would satisfy a best interest duty. I happily argue that.
We've got retirement specialists on hand to actually help advisors do these sorts of projections that Liz just mentioned, right? And we've gone back and analysed these projections. So, and this comes to the, you know, advisors often ask, hey, what's the sweet spot? Who's the ideal client? And I answer with this stat. Of all the projections we've done over years now, about 76% of the accumulation clients, 76% of the projections, show an age pension uplift of more than $100,000 over 20 years in retirement. More than $100,000. I think the record staggeringly is like $600,000 or something ridiculous. But these are substantial. You know, you're not going to recoup that by saving 20 cents a week on an admin fee or something, right? These are strategies that can help a very, very wide range of clients. 3/4 is our number, but please test it for yourselves. But we just need to think in a different dimension beyond just what's the sticker price of the fee. But keeping in mind, as Liz already mentioned, that it can be very cost effective being on a platform. Certainly, being on North, we have already low fees. Our new Grow menu is even lower for low balance clients, and the IRIS costs you nothing extra.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I was just thinking about every single advisor I know of would be dealing with transitioning a client into retirement, and it is only going to become more and more apparent. We've got a greater population aging and they're all retiring or in retirement. So it's certainly something where we can add a lot of value. What about those advisors that do have quite a large book of existing retired clients? I was actually looking at this for one of my clients. So we're not in the accumulation phase anymore. We're already sitting in account-based pension. They're in their 70s, but you're looking at this going, okay, this would be fantastic. God, I wish I'd known about this earlier. That's sort of what the conversation I had last year when I heard about this. I know already off the top of my head a whole list of people in my client book that would benefit from this. What's the pros and cons of actually moving a client into an IRIS during retirement?
So
just asking for a friend.
we've got three IRIS types. We've talked about them here, but just to summarize again, we've got the accumulation IRIS, we've got the deferred one in retirement phase, and then we've got the income paying IRIS. And I'm, well, maybe a little bit surprised to say, but not really. For launching a lifetime income solution, our least popular one is the one that actually pays the income. And so the accumulation one is easily the most popular because it's just it's a free option that many advisors are giving to simply all their clients on review. But even for those who are retired, we actually see the deferred as more popular than the income paying. And the reason is the strategy that Liz talked about before. You can have someone who's just ready to, you know, they're already retired. Maybe the first one we sold to this was an 86-year-old. So apparently they saved 20-odd grand in aged care costs sort of immediately by using this strategy because of that there's no income test. So, you know, it can suit people who are very well already retired, already along that journey, because you can be taking lump sums to fund retirement. but there's simply zero income test, and those lump sums are reducing your assessable assets every time you take them. And so very, very powerful strategies. Personally, if I was sitting in front of a client, I would never be starting with the lifetime income account first. I'd always be using the deferred one. It's more complex. So maybe if the client just really needs to understand it, maybe it's too complex, sure. But I think that's our, you know, that's advisors' jobs to make the complex simple and to add that value. And that is the greatest value you can do is using that deferred one. So yeah, it's a very powerful strategy, and I guess I'm really pleased to see that advisors are grasping that and using that even more commonly than just the simple lifetime income stream. Yeah. Sorry, and I need to point out for those who aren't familiar with these, at some point you use the deferred. At some point there's some restrictions that will kick in, that there's some legislative restrictions, and so then you flick the switch and turn it into a lifetime income stream. So instead of taking lump sums anymore, you actually turn on the income. That does turn on the income test. And so yeah, you can't do that. Those are deferred strategies indefinitely, but they're very, very powerful for, say, 5 to 10 years while you do run them.
And Liz, have you actually shifted clients that are in that space, like in retirement space? Are you doing that as well?
No, I'm doing it more at the moment with clients who are actively retiring at the time. I guess if you have people in retirement who are nervous of running out of money and want that income stream that's guaranteed, I guess the issue with my database is clients in that space already probably... I've already put something in place with annuities and those sorts of things to cover those risks. But you could potentially use it, as Ben says, to help boost and bring forward Centrelink entitlements as well in that retirement phase. So the way to explain, I think, the deferred concept quite simply is you have your account balance and a purchase price. And instead of taking income, you're taking a lump sum payment. And every time you do that, it's reducing that purchase price, which is the only number that Centrelink looks at. And so if that's all that a client takes away from it, that's all they really need to know for the most part. Some people obviously want to know a lot more than that and get under the hood a little bit. But that's generally enough, I find, for most people to go, okay, that's great, and we'll leave at rest with you, Liz.
I think if you're demonstrating what their income ability is, for lack of better wording, if that makes sense. But basically, what's that going to look like in retirement if they're doing that commutation, they're doing that lump sum payment, and then they're getting some Centrelink, I mean, those two pieces together, what does that look like for them and to ensure that they're achieving the lifestyle needs they've got? And, you know, for me, I'm always talking to clients about, you know, what are the goals? What are we doing this year? Are we going to travel? Are we getting on a cruise? Or, you know, they're gifting their kids or their grandkids of education, all those kind of conversations. So if it's meeting that, I think clients, that's what they want to see. They want to see, am I going to meet all of these goals and objectives throughout the next 12 months? And if you're getting that extra uplift where they're getting a bonus payment through Centrelink, that's even better. And then on the flip side, Ben did mention something that I was going to bring up later. But while I think of it, you also brought up the aged care, the guide saving money and that aged care piece. That is just another piece to this whole strategy that can, it's like a layer cake. It's just, you know, layer upon layer, you've got all these little gems in there. Another thing that can elevate the client's situation if we are looking down the road, potential care needs because of its treatment, the income treatment and whatnot. Have you had any of those conversations? Sorry, I was going to say Liz, given her advice experience, but no, Ben, please jump in.
As you rightly point out, it's similar or the same testing that applies to aged care assessment as for the age pension. And so, yeah, you do get these benefits of a lower assessable assets and lower assessable income with these sorts of strategies. Keeping in mind, of course, that the money in an IRIS, you can take lump sums up to a certain level, but you wouldn't be paying a RAD out of an IRIS. It'd be very good for paying a weekly rental for an aged care facility because it's simply income at a high level that never runs out, and that it also has some good assessments associated with that, and so that can be a really useful strategy. But you know, like we've already mentioned, you wouldn't generally put all your money in an IRIS. You want some other accessible assets so that you can have optionality for funding the type of care that your clients will need at the time.
Yeah. So basically this creates an incredibly flexible way of managing, I guess, all of the nuances of retirement planning, which includes the estate planning piece, it includes the aged care piece, it includes Centrelink, and it includes, of course, the need to have a regular and consistent income stream. And then we've also got market risk and longevity. So it's covering all bases in respect to all those challenges that an advisor has to look at and consider when doing a forecast on what the client actually is going to need throughout their throughout their retired years. So it's an incredible package, for lack of better wording. Again, I'm trying to work out how do we even frame that as a, you know, without saying it's a product, but it's actually quite a package or a strategy.
It's a lot of strategies in one.
Yeah. It's not one strategy per se. It's creating solutions. Sorry, Ben, you were going to say something in regards to that as well.
I'm glad you touched on that because this isn't the first lifetime income stream I've designed and launched, but it was certainly the first with advisors in mind. And so instead of launching a previously, I've launched a product. This we really intended deliberately. No, we're not launching a product. We're launching flexible account solutions that can be used for quite a wide range of strategies. And we sort of picked apart and thought, what do advisors want to do? Where does the value they want to add? They want to add value in investment strategy. They want to add value in bucketing and drawdown strategies. They want to add value in asset allocation and capital allocation and structuring with Centrelink and estate values and all these sorts of things. And so a set and forget solution wasn't going to work. A limited investment menu wasn't going to work. You get the income that we pay you on the dates we tell you wasn't going to work. Instead, you've simply got account structures that are completely transparent and very flexible within some legislative and product rules, of course, to make them work. At the end of the day, of course, we're making a promise that the income lasts forever, and so there's going to be some capital restrictions as the big one. And look, we really battled with this sort of flexibility, sophistication, complexity. Can people understand it? Sort of these trade-offs. But we ended up where we ended up because each of the bits of sophistication we've got remaining, things like investment choice and ability to dial income up and down and defer, they all add value and add additional strategies for advisors. And so we were keen to just simply create a whole lot of new strategies that advisors can use instead of saying, hey, this is the way to do it, set and forget, and then you're out of the picture.
You've mentioned, like, of course, there's some restrictions and there's little caveats in there. So where could this go wrong if it could? Or perhaps the other question maybe I should ask is, who's this not appropriate for?
Our TMD calls out a few. If you had a single client without a spouse who was in very poor health, who wasn't expected to live very long, of course, we wouldn't recommend that, and our TMD would call that out. But, you know, we've had clients who have been in poor health, who've purchased these, have passed away already, but now they've got an income for a spouse, and perhaps that spouse wasn't as involved in the finances, and they passed away in comfort and confidence that their spouse is going to be looked after for life. I mean, for me, I think that's a really lovely thing. For me, the target mark of these is people who are saving for retirement or want to spend money in retirement. But yes, there's some capital restrictions. You know, that sounds a little bit glib, but that's really who it is. For me, if I was sitting in front of a client, I would be considering, not recommending, but I'd be considering an IRIS every time. It's just simply part of my standard consideration set. I think back to, I wasn't working, but when I was at a previous fund, it was like I think 30 years since we launched the account-based pension, and went back and had a look at the business case and then the take-up, and the take-up was terrible. In the first 6 months, I think there were 16 account-based pensions were sold, and we were paying trailing commissions at the time to advisors, but it just, you know, people weren't used to it. It was unfamiliar. People were just used to taking the lump sum and cashing out and doing whatever. But now you won't find a single advisor in Australia who doesn't consider an account-based pension every single time and probably does recommend it 99% of the time. For me, that's just, IRIS should be in that same, I think we're on that same journey. It'll just simply become part of the standard consideration set. But yeah, if it doesn't suit the client, I mean, if you've got fabulously wealthy clients who never need to draw down on capital, yeah, probably an Iris is not for them. For middle Australia, it's the most efficient way to convert capital to income. And so back to my original point, this will maximize income for very, very many people. And that's why we did it in a way that's sustainable. We find that people are comfortable to spend capital once they've overcome what we call FORO, the fear of running out.
And Liz, drawing on your experience, if you were to talk to other advisors, what would you say, or how would you encourage them to get started? When's the right time to start? What kind of client would that look like to get them in that direction?
I would start with looking at it for every client, as Ben says. You'll be surprised where it does fit. I would start with the accumulation phase. It's the easiest bit to get your head around. If you're not familiar with North, it will help you get familiar with North. And then start tackling the retirement stuff once you've got your head around that. North are really good. The interactive tools online is pretty good, as well as the training and support from them in general. So they'll come and see you. They're running roadshows. There's all sorts of things you can access. So I'd start with accumulation and take it from there.
Excellent. I think we're almost up because I've almost run out of questions, believe it or not, me. Have nothing to say. I'm like, okay, I'm actually going to go through my list and have a look at some of these clients that I've got that really possibly could benefit from this myself. I guess if I'm going to ask you one more question, Ben, is there anything that you would sort of say to be aware of when giving this kind of looking at this structure? I mean, I've already asked in terms of risk and that one client you sort of alluded to, if they're of ill health. I guess because once, if they've got all funding in this, that can be a bit of a potential red flag if they are in ill health. Do you mind just expanding on that a little? I don't want to sort of leave on the negative, by the way. Just want to just cover everything.
Sure, not at all. So keep in mind that there's a money-back death benefit. We certainly on North, but other Iris solutions have similar. Effectively, you put in $300,000 and die the next day, the kids get $300,000. If they died after 3 years and maybe you've got $100,000 of income, I'm just making up some numbers here. Just say you got $100,000 of income, then there's $200,000 available as a death benefit. It comes out of the account balance. So if the account balance doesn't have that much left in it, then so be it. You get the full account balance, but typically there'll probably be a little bit more. And that little bit more goes to the insurer who are on the hook to make sure that these accounts never run out of money and they pay income for life. And so in return, the insurer pays what we call an annual bonus. It's a cash amount into the retirement phase accounts to make sure they're topped up and never run out. That money back concept, it gives clients peace of mind that, hey, look, you're going to get fair value. You're going to get your money back, ideally as income over a long period of time. But if you pass away early, then as a the remainder of that money back as a death benefit. And so you will sort of see, certainly, you know, people die after a few years, there'll be a gap between the account balance and the money back. But keeping in mind, of course, if there's a spouse, which often there is, then that's irrelevant anyway because the income keeps on being paid to the spouse. We've had a bunch of people pass away now with the solution. We haven't had any complaints. You know, I think I'm really pleased that the advisors are doing a great job explaining, hey, look, these are the trade-offs you're making. You actually can even opt out of that death benefit if you want to get higher bonuses from the insurer. And the reason you do that, if you had no beneficiaries, we have maybe 5% of clients opting out of the death benefit. And again, we've had one of those pass away already who'd opted out. You know, no issues. I think if it's well explained, you understand the people, the trade-offs that they're making, which is simply, you know, part of the strategies and you know, I don't want to sound too flippant about it, but all those clients still had income for life for as long as they lived, and they had confidence that they were never going to run out, and they very likely had higher age pension and maybe a pension concession card they didn't otherwise have. You know, that but both financially and psychologically, I'd be very comfortable saying that they were better off.
Yeah. I was having a conversation just yesterday around this around Iris, and you know, when we were talking about what's important to the client being Do they want to be able to leave a legacy for the kids? But there's also the flip side. They actually want to enjoy their retirement, and the kids usually don't care to inherit. They want their parents to actually have a wonderful retirement as well. Well, that's what you hope for kids, for them anyway. And in the conversations I've had, that's usually what has occurred. It's like, no, don't worry about us. Enjoy your retirement, right? And this is basically allowing that ongoing income stream. And I think if we're going to take away anything we've learnt today in this podcast is that there are solutions. This creates layers of strategies that create solutions and certainty around creating income throughout retirement, regardless of what markets are doing and regardless of with an uplift potentially with Centrelink as well. There's so many other factors. I can't even sum it up. I think if you listen to this whole episode, I'm hoping you would walk away going, wow, there's so many things that I could do to improve our clients' retirement journey using this kind of strategy. So I really appreciate you both sharing your knowledge. I'm still learning myself. This has been fantastic. Thank you, Liz. Thank you, Ben. Reach out if you have any questions. And appreciate Ensemble for allowing us to host this podcast. And I feel it's really important that everyone does learn about this, about IRIS, because I don't believe, as you said, Ben, it's not going anywhere. And once upon a time, account-based pensions were new too.
Thanks for having us. Really appreciate the conversation, Amy.
It was a pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
Pleasure. Thank you.